We're going to begin with agenda item 20 at this point in time. Mr. Harris, would you like to introduce this item for us?
The last item for the day, item 20, is an information item to update the board. To update the board on the status of implementation of the agricultural order.
I don't hear you.
Do you hear me, Abby? I mean, can you hear me? Can you hear me in the back?
No.
Oh. Do I need to speak closer? Is that better? Okay. All right.
Today's staff presentation will discuss activities related to groundwater monitoring, focusing on cooperative groundwater monitoring. Angela Schroeder, our program manager, will make a brief presentation about the status of the cooperative groundwater monitoring requirement, as well as proposed edits to the monitoring and reporting program that would allow additional growers to participate in approved cooperative groundwater monitoring programs. Per the agricultural order, cooperative monitoring proposals are due today, March 15, 2013. Staff has met with grower groups to discuss preliminary draft proposals, but has not yet had the opportunity to evaluate the final proposals. Agricultural representatives Abby Taylor Silva of Grower Shippers Association of Central California and Claire Wyman of Grower Shippers Association of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties are here to describe their specific proposals. And Abby and Claire flipped a coin. Abby won, so Abby's going to make, after staff, will make the first presentation.
Thank you. Angela Schroeder, Program Manager for the Agricultural Regulatory Program. Before we begin, just to make sure that you have all the materials, since we did distribute some supplemental information late yesterday, and I believe it's also in the boxes for the members of the public who wish to receive that information. So you had the original staff report and three attachments, the third attachment of which was some proposed changes to the monitoring reporting program. And then yesterday you should have received a supplemental sheet, which includes some questions and responses from the farm tours, as well as two attachments. The first attachment was a comment letter regarding this item from environmental justice groups. And attachment two, which was additional proposed changes to the MRP, which were not reflected in the original attachment to the staff report. So in terms of the MRP changes, the attachment to the supplemental sheet is the most recent version. So we're happy here to talk to you today and update you on the agricultural regulatory program and specifically about groundwater monitoring. It's one of the highest priorities for the order, so I think that this is an important topic to brief you on the status. So as an overview, my presentation will go over a status of the groundwater monitoring requirements, you know, sort of a brief reminder of what they are, what the due dates are, and some preliminary statistics about grower response and compliance. We'll specifically focus on groundwater monitoring related to the cooperative option also. As I mentioned, we are also evaluating proposed changes to the monitoring reporting program. Those changes are specifically in response to requests from growers that would like an additional opportunity to switch their election from individual groundwater monitoring to cooperative monitoring. So these proposed changes would allow them to do that. In addition, we'll talk about the status of our efforts and coordination to develop cooperative groundwater monitoring programs. As Ken mentioned, proposals were due are due today. So we have not, although we've received some, we have not yet reviewed any of them in detail. So we won't be talking about our review, but Abby Taylor Silva from Grower Shipper of Central California, as well as Claire Wyman from the Santa Barbara Slough Counties here, will present the details. The supplemental sheet, again, has farm tour questions related specifically to groundwater monitoring, so we will be summarizing the responses to those questions, and then you'll have a chance to hear from the growers. So as I mentioned, groundwater monitoring is among the highest priorities for the order. As described in the order, they are in response to the severity of the water quality conditions in agricultural areas of our region. And among those highest priorities is the critical evaluation and protection of domestic drinking water data. So the purpose other requirements are to evaluate these groundwater conditions, as well as to obtain the data critical for protecting drinking water sources, and especially those that are the most vulnerable, such as the domestic drinking water wells. In addition, data is critical for prioritizing areas for nutrient management, so we can identify those areas that are at greatest risk for nitrogen loading, so we can work on starting to resolve some of these very severe groundwater quality issues. The order does provide options for how to do this. Growers have the option to comply by implementing individual groundwater monitoring requirements or by participating in a cooperative. And consistent with these priorities, two things I think that you'll hear me emphasize over and over again, and probably the growers as well, is the urgent need to evaluate drinking water and the importance of timing for implementation. So this slide specifically identifies the timeframes associated with the cooperative groundwater monitoring requirements. As you might recall, in the original adoption of the agricultural order, the deadline for choosing the option to select cooperative monitoring was June 15th of 2012. In response to requests from growers to extend that deadline, we did provide for an additional 45 days and change the MRP to indicate an August 1st of 2012 deadline. And that deadline is now passed, but as I mentioned, we are considering edits to the MRP to provide yet an additional opportunity. So growers who choose cooperative groundwater monitoring must participate in an approved cooperative groundwater monitoring program, and the deadline to submit those proposals for executive officer review approval is today. And I do want to emphasize the importance for the time frame, both in terms of evaluating groundwater quality so that we can ensure a timely response and also look at protecting drinking water supplies, but also because it's important that we provide the time frame necessary for growers to for plans that are not available or approved and the grower has selected cooperative that they can then start to conduct individual groundwater monitoring by this fall if the cooperative is approved so that they can work on participating in the cooperative. Again, if the cooperative proposal is not approved, those growers must conduct individual groundwater monitoring starting this September. And we can talk about the sort of the process and time frame for doing this in more detail if you'd like to do that towards the end of the talk. So here are the general statistics for groundwater monitoring. Again, just to remind you that as of January of 2013, there are approximately 4,200 individual farms enrolled in the agricultural order. About 2,600 of those farms elected the individual groundwater monitoring option. A brief summary of that requirement is that growers conducted individual groundwater sampling at their primary irrigation well and any domestic wells in September through December of last year, and they must actually are starting to do that again for the second sampling period, March through June of 2013. While the sampling periods are continuing, growers have until October 1st of 2013 to actually submit the data. And this allows for those growers who have existing data, those who didn't have to sample, to provide that existing data. So of those 2,600 farms, 709 farms have submitted data to us. That includes both existing data that they had over the past 5 years, as well as about 300 to 400 farms that have actually sampled their wells and submitted that data as an upload to GeoTracker. So you'll notice that 2,600 minus 709 is quite a large number. Some growers have not sampled their wells and are possibly out of compliance, although they do have until October 1 of 2013 to submit data, so that's not yet known to us. Some plan to submit existing data and will do so prior to the October 1st date. And also, we know that some growers want to switch to the cooperative monitoring option and so have been sort of holding out for the opportunity to do that. And that's related to the proposed MRP edits that we have before you today. So of the 4,200 farms, 1,600 of them have also elected the cooperative option, and those growers elected it prior to the August 1st, 2012 deadline. And so the proposals for those covering those growers are due today. As of now, staff is aware of cooperative area efforts in three geographic areas, and we'll talk about that in more detail in a moment. But I think it's important to point out that many farms that did elect cooperative don't appear to be included. So at least some number of the 1,600 farms will not fall in at least the three areas that we know about where cooperative efforts are being developed. So those growers would have to start individual monitoring by this September unless a proposal came in that included their farm. So as I mentioned previously, growers participating in the cooperative groundwater monitoring are developing these proposals. The order includes specific criteria that must be included in the cooperative groundwater monitoring program proposals. And those are that the proposal must include sufficient monitoring to characterize groundwater in the local geographic area of participating growers. So it must include sampling that's representative. So you, most of these criteria are dependent upon the local conditions of the geographic area for which the proposal is covering. And so the order and MRP speak generally to that to provide the flexibility to do that within the context of individual areas. The proposal also must characterize groundwater quality of the uppermost aquifer. So that the term uppermost aquifer means the first groundwater below the ground surface. And so that would be the first groundwater that would receive any discharge of waste. And it would also be the most vulnerable aquifer due to the impacts of that loading. In addition, and probably most importantly, the proposals must identify and evaluate domestic drinking water. And as you'll hear when I start talking about our conversations with the growers, staff has really emphasized the importance of identifying and evaluating domestic drinking water and also the importance of doing that in a timely manner. We expect the proposals to include that sampling early in their in the implementation. Finally, the proposals must also be consistent with the other MRP requirements that are included for the individual groundwater monitoring option. Things like they must include the same parameters that the individual groundwater monitoring has to do. It has to be the same methodology, analytical methods or comparable methodology has to be used. And the reporting must be electronic and to GeoTracker, similar to the individual. And that's really important because we have to be able to effectively manage the data. One of the, what you heard when we were developing the order and also some of the findings that have later come out in the UC Davis nitrate report by Thomas Harder, as well as the report to the legislature, the need to start evaluating this data with greater capacity over the course of time is very important to help us evaluate and solve this groundwater problem. So in addition, the proposals must identify the participating growers. There's a consequence for being in the program, and there's a consequence for being out. So it's really important that we know who is in and who is out. And it's also important that the proposal include a time schedule for implementation. And again, timing is really important, and there is this urgency to assess groundwater used for domestic drinking water. In addition, the proposals must describe third parties if they apply to the proposal. As we've heard with Preservation Inc., it's important for us to clearly understand the organizational structure, the roles and responsibilities of the third party, the financial resources to implement the plan over time. These are all important so that we can assure the successful implementation of the approved program. Again, these are all areas that we've emphasized with growers in our discussions and preliminary comments regarding the cooperative groundwater monitoring proposals and staff's review, although we have not yet reviewed the final proposals that are due today. So So the proposed revisions to MRP, as I mentioned, the executive officer is considering proposed revisions. Those are included again as attachment 2 to the supplemental sheet. And this really is in response to growers' requests to allow an additional opportunity to switch from the cooperative or from the individual to the cooperative option. There are specific criteria, and if you read the language, that apply for this to be able to happen. An approved cooperative groundwater monitoring program has to be in place. So you can't elect to switch from individual to cooperative if there's no cooperative to switch to. In addition, growers must meet the following criteria. The farm for that grower must be covered by the program, so it has to be included in the specific geographic area that program is implementing, and the grower must be in compliance with the MRP general MRP requirements. And so those are individual monitoring. So growers were required, who has selected individual, to conduct monitoring in September through December 2012. Many growers did do that, and so we feel like it's important to include that as one of the criteria for participating in the cooperative. In addition, there are other basic requirements that growers must be in compliance with, and those are updating your ENOI, which was due October of 2012, as well as submitting the annual compliance form, which was due in December of 2012. And the annual compliance form is only applies to the Tier 2 and Tier 3, so for Tier 1 growers, that would not apply. So again, staff is aware of three efforts in various geographic areas of the region that are working to develop cooperative groundwater monitoring efforts. The first is in the northern central coast area. This effort is being headed by Western Growers, Grower Shipper Association of Central California, as well as the Monterey County Farm Bureau. And as I mentioned, Abby will be able to present to you the details of that proposal. Water Board staff has met with this group in Salinas. We've participated in several phone conversations with the rower representatives as well as their consultants, and reviewed and commented on two conceptual drafts of their proposal. The project proponents describe that this proposal will likely include parts of Monterey, Santa Cruz, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties, but we haven't actually seen the final proposal to have some specifics on the actual geographic area. The second effort is the Southern Central Coast effort, and that's headed by Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. And as I mentioned, Claire Wyman will be here to talk to you more about that effort. And we haven't seen a draft proposal of this, but we know that the effort will focus mostly on the Santa Maria watershed. That's our staff's understanding. And actually, the proposal was submitted, I think, late yesterday. So we haven't reviewed it yet, but a proposal has been submitted by that group. The third area, actually, you can call it a third and fourth area, is the Santa Rosa Creek and then the Morro Creek and Little Morro Creek watersheds. And that's a much smaller scale geographic area compared to the other two. It's headed by local growers, so this is different in that we've been talking with individual growers assisted by the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. So, and again, we've, similar to the Northern Central Coast effort, we have met with these growers and discussed their proposals, draft proposals with them on several occasions. And the growers have submitted a final proposal, one for the Santa Rosa Creek watershed. I believe we received that one yesterday. And then another proposal was received from Morro Creek and Little Morro Creek watersheds this morning. Again, in our discussions with these three groups, we've emphasized that what's important and what staff will be focusing on are the geographic areas, the technical justification for the sampling design proposed, the time schedule for implementation, and especially the priority for sampling domestic wells in the near term. So while staff has not yet reviewed the proposals, we have identified several areas in our discussions with grower representatives and preliminary reviews of the conceptual proposals that we will be looking at, that we shared with the growers, and that we'll be looking at how they are resolved in the final proposals. And these include, again, the definition of the geographic boundaries of the program. As, you know, it's important to know what farms may be included in those various programs. The specificity of numbers and locations of monitoring points, as well as a technical justification for the proposed sampling design. It really is important and tied to the characteristics of that area. So, for example, if you have a very complex hydrogeology, you might need more sampling points and a higher density within a smaller area. Or if you have a very simple or you know, not so heterogeneous type of hydrogeology, that you might need less sampling density. Again, the time frame for implementation and the urgency to evaluate domestic drinking water are important for the proposals. And also, again, the success of the long-term implementation and looking at the organizational structure for the third party. One area also that I want to identify as an existing grower concern that they've conveyed to us is a well location confidentiality, as well as the handling of the water quality data. Well location confidentiality is important with respect to, for example, public municipal supply wells, and in fact, in response to 9/11 and Homeland Security, Department of Public Health issued, I don't know if it was in law or how they articulated this, but well locations must be kept confidential to an accuracy of a half-mile radius. That applies to the water board. So we have a non-disclosure agreement for using that data in GeoTracker, so it cannot be displayed or shared with the public beyond a half-mile radius. So that non-disclosure agreement deals specifically with well locations, and in response, consistent with that, we apply that same thinking to domestic drinking water wells on agricultural lands, and that same language is in our order that protects the location of those wells to a half-mile radius. I know growers, I mean, you'll probably hear this today in the presentations, are still somewhat concerned with that half-mile radius protection. In addition, there's concern about the handling of water quality data and the availability of that data to the public. And I've forwarded that concern to Jessica, and so we're looking at how we're talking with the growers about what is at the root of that concern of handling water quality data, and then we're also evaluating what discretion we have in terms of disclosing or not disclosing that data based upon the public's right to information. So I also wanted to just go over a couple of questions that were brought up at the farm tours, as we described at the February meeting. There was farm tours that the board members and the executive officer participated in December and January, I think it was. And the last board meeting, we talked about the questions that came up related to the annual compliance form. So today I wanted to just go over some of the questions that came up relative to groundwater. And I've shown them here. They're discussed. The responses are detailed in the supplemental sheet. And I really wanted to go over three of them specifically. And one, what is the water board? The first that I want to go over is the first one in bold. What is the water board going to do with the data? And I want to be really clear, as I emphasized initially, that the purpose of the groundwater monitoring requirements is to evaluate groundwater quality, which is critically important given the severity of the water quality conditions in our region. Secondly, to collect the data necessary to protect drinking water by identifying areas of greatest risk for exceeding drinking water standards, as well as prioritizing areas for nutrient management. We know that the hydrogeology and water quality of an area is dependent upon site-specific conditions, and the hydrogeology, what are we going to do with the data at this point from this initial sampling is really screening. It's really to identify those areas that have exceedances where we need to do timely follow-up actions to protect drinking water and reduce loading. So there is not, we're not trying to do an academic type of study with this first set of data in terms of, you know, rates of groundwater flow, rates of nitrogen loading, or a very detailed, more complex analysis. The follow-up related to this data may include actions such as requesting additional information about groundwater conditions or the implementation of management practices to ensure that we are reducing nitrate loading. It may include notifying drinking water users of water quality conditions to protect public health. It may be notifying owners of the necessity to provide safe drinking water. And it may also be to prepare and disseminate status reports that explain the water quality conditions in our agricultural areas. And again, as we've been discussing, the data will be maintained in the State Water Resources Control Board's GeoTracker database, and that's consistent with all of the other groundwater programs at the Water Board. So that's, you know, sort of a synopsis of what we're going to do with the data. And again, we've heard questions or comments that the individual groundwater monitoring data may not reflect complex hydrogeology, and it may not provide a detailed understanding of the nitrate, but it really isn't intended to do so at that level. This individual groundwater monitoring requirements is really meant to provide an initial screening to quickly identify areas and then to do the appropriate follow-up in a timely manner. We sort of characterize it as triage. We're really just trying to focus in on the areas where we need to. So in conclusion, again, groundwater is our highest priority. There is urgency to protect drinking water sources, and that has to be done in a timely manner. The order does provide options. Growers can choose individual or cooperative. The timing for implementation of the proposals is critical. And that's both from the need to protect drinking water and evaluate the groundwater quality, but also because we're expecting this data to come in the first few years of the order. And so it's really important for growers to know, are they conducting individual or are they going to do a cooperative? And we can't wait too long to figure that out so that we can notify the growers of their responsibilities. Staff, the proposals are due today. Staff will review the proposals within approximately 30 days. And the intent is to provide growers with an additional 45 days to submit the revised proposal. And again, we are considering, the executive office is considering revisions to the MRP to allow growers to participate in the approved cooperative programs if specific conditions apply. And in last February, we discussed continuing this item or this discussion to the May 2013 meeting. And at that point, we should be able to tell you more both about the individual groundwater monitoring compliance as well as the status of our review of the proposal submitted today. And with that, I'll answer any questions, and we can get to the presentations by the grower groups.
Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you, Angela. You answered most of my questions, but I still have a question about the groundwater quality in the uppermost aquifer. And the Salinas Valley is a very complex system of different aquifers. Some parts of Salinas Valley has 60-foot, 180-foot, 400-foot, 800-foot, 1,200-foot aquifers. And most of the farmers that I know don't even go in the 60-foot because it is contaminated now. If the particular farm in question that we're asking for the uppermost would be the 60-foot aquifer, are you, a staff, asking them to put a monitoring well in to sample that? If they have no well that hits that particular, because that would be the uppermost aquifer or first groundwater they would hit?
So just to clarify, that slide that I was showing the criteria was for the cooperative groundwater monitoring proposals only. So that uppermost aquifer criteria doesn't apply to the individual groundwater monitoring requirements. The purpose of the individual groundwater monitoring requirements was actually to, to be reasonable in requiring growers to sample the existing wells that they had. We understood that that was the simplest, easiest, and most quick thing to do, and so that that's what the individual groundwater monitoring requirements is for.
Okay, so let's address the cooperative then. Are you asking if there's no well that's at 60-foot aquifer, you're asking that group to put a monitoring well and get a sample?
There is not a requirement to put a monitoring well. However, there is a requirement to evaluate the uppermost aquifer. There are various ways in which you can do that. Monitoring wells is certainly one of them. We are expecting proposals to evaluate the uppermost aquifer. And if the necessity is to either do grab sampling or to install a new well, both of those are options for doing that.
How would you grab sample if you didn't have a well?
There are certain technologies, push technologies, that you can use as a temporary sampling point to take grab samples, much less expensive than installing a well.
I'm still confused on that. That it bothers me that we would ask, and I understand why you want that, and I may agree somewhat, but to have the extra expense to possibly drill for a monitoring well would be an additional expense to the farmers, or even if it's a cooperative monitoring area.
Well, the cooperative, the groundwater monitoring requirements in general are in response to needing to address the really severe groundwater quality conditions. And the uppermost aquifer affords the best opportunity to look at the most vulnerable and the most quick to respond to the discharge of waste at the land surface. It also helps us set up a baseline for understanding the impacts from the overlying agricultural land use. And so it's really an important area of understanding to help us address the problem.
So how are you going to grab sample? Where are you going to get the grab sample from? In that cooperative area, there is no wells at the 60-foot level. Where are you going to get your grab sample from?
The order in our MRP provides the growers or their third-party groups with the opportunity to propose whatever scenario is appropriate for them. We don't prescribe where to do it.
You're not telling them how to do it, but you're asking for it. So if there's no availability way of doing it other than digging a hole, and I don't know anybody can dig down 60 feet, but and of course in parts of Salinas area, it could be 4 to 5 feet deep before you hit first groundwater. But my question is, well, I think you answered the question. The question is, you want that sample regardless of how they get it.
The requirement is that the proposal must include a methodology to provide a representative analysis of groundwater in the uppermost aquifer. And it's really dependent upon the site-specific conditions, where that is in terms of the depth and also where the sampling is located. And it's the flexibility is in the proposals for growers to be able to do that, where it is appropriate. It's really this is really a very common thing in the way we characterize groundwater, is looking at groundwater quality in the uppermost aquifer. There's lots of technologies that
you
can do.
Well, I can understand if you only have one aquifer, but when you have multitudes of aquifers in the Salinas Valley, especially west of Salinas, that supposedly there's no continuity between them other than once it gets south of Chular or at the ocean from the pressure of saltwater intrusion. So there's supposedly no continuity between any of the layers or any of the aquifers themselves.
I think what you're describing really emphasizes a good point that I was trying to make in terms of the cooperative monitoring. The proposals is really going to be dependent upon the complexity or the simplicity of the specific site. So in areas where you have that type of complexity, it's going to require a more in-depth analysis, both in terms of where to do the sampling and locations and density, as well as how to develop that proposal.
Okay. I've raised the question. We'll see what happens.
My concern about what I've just heard is this. I was not under the impression ever that we were requiring any farmer to have to put a well in. So I can't imagine how else you'd get water out of 60 feet unless you're going to drill some well. So
the proposal allows, if you read the language in the order and the MRP, it provides full flexibility with which to get that information. So if there's existing data out there, you can grab that. If there's modeling information, you could potentially grab that. And I think these things are all as an EG. If there's no data, certainly you would have to figure out a way to be able to provide that analysis in the uppermost aquifer. I think what's important is that we did recognize that in the development of the order, and that's why we added on the individual groundwater monitoring option. It was the easiest way to sample groundwater at the least expense, at the expense of not being able to get some of this more detailed information.
So, Mr. Chair, just to make sure we all are clear, is if you're an individual grower, we're not asking you to do that. If your well is at 600 feet, you'll sample your 600-foot well. It's only the cooperatives where that requirement comes into play.
That's correct, and it's not. It's the cooperative can propose how and where they will do that. It may be on an individual farm, or it may not be on an individual farm.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow it up, Mr. Chair. Then what I'm hearing, because you're asking for drinking water samples, well samples, right? You have irrigated water samples, which could be a different aquifer, right?
Are you speaking of the individual requirement or the
I'm
cooperative?
I'm speaking of cooperative.
Okay. The cooperative is just those three criteria.
Well, okay. So you're asking for monitoring at the drinking water well, right?
We're asking monitoring for a representative sample that would allow us to evaluate domestic drinking water.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you're asking a sample from the irrigated well. Is that right?
That's not a requirement in the cooperative. It's not an explicit requirement.
But you are asking one for the closest aquifer from the...
The uppermost aquifer.
Uppermost aquifer. Can they secure that information from Monterey County Water Resources Agency? Because they do have some of that data on file. I don't know if it's throughout the valley, but there was some test years ago in saltwater intrusion. Is that, and how new of information are you requiring?
The cooperative groundwater monitoring language in the order does allow for existing data to be used. It is up to the proposal and the growers who are putting forward that proposal to demonstrate how that fills in the criteria. Based upon our initial analysis of data, for example, collected by Monterey County Water Resources Agency, the uppermost aquifer is a data gap. So it's possible that it could be fulfilled that way, but we're not sure it does.
Okay. Dr. Hunter?
Do you envision any overlap with the USGS work that's going on that's targeting the Salinas?
We have mentioned that work to the growers who are doing the proposals, and we've also mentioned it to GAMMA, who is implementing that work, and so there is absolutely opportunities to coordinate.
Okay, and then there was one more part to that. I think I'm following Mr. Johnston. I just lost it. Okay, I'll think about it.
Mr. Johnston.
Follow me, you'll get lost. like I said, a couple of questions. So just to make sure I understand, we have a high priority on identifying issues with drinking water. And if you're doing individual monitoring, you're going to obviously you're going to sample any drinking water wells on your farm. It's one irrigation well and any drinking water wells, as I recall.
And if you're doing
a cooperative monitoring, how does that work with the drinking water? Are we just kind of waiting to see what the proposals are? Are we requiring the cooperative, the folks who are enrolled in a cooperative, to give us information as to what wells have people drinking water out of them? Or are they just giving us a sense of the status of that upper aquifer?
The requirement is to provide data that would accurately represent the the source that's used for drinking water. So, for example, in Mr. Jeffrey's example in the Salinas Valley, let's say you knew that this particular aquifer was the aquifer that provided the domestic drinking water. So you'd have to make sure that you had sampling that was representative of that area of the aquifer. Does not necessarily mean sampling every domestic drinking water well, although certainly you could approach it from sampling domestic drinking water wells in the area.
All right, so let's say we have five adjacent farms, mm-hmm. in a small area that are all in a cooperative monitoring program. It's quite possible that one sample would give us the picture we need of the water quality. Will they also be then identifying for us if on any of those farms that water is being used as domestic water and breaking that out by farm, or is that included in our requirements?
For the individual or cooperative, to be clear.
For cooperative.
The cooperative is not the requirement to identify individual wells, but the resource. So this aquifer is used for domestic drinking water wells, drinking water, for example. You could go as far as to say by these following communities, and here are the wells that we're going to sample to be representative of that drinking water.
What I'm asking mm-hmm. is, I'm not asking if they have to identify all the individual wells. I'm asking if they have to identify the farms that have in that little cluster of five, let's say, that have people using that water as domestic drinking water.
That's not a requirement of the proposals.
But
just to be really clear to answer your question, the example you said with the five growers, and it's possible, and in fact some of the proposals have been described to us that way. You know, we have 10 growers in this area. We think these two wells are representative of all of our wells. Is that potentially a solution for the cooperative? And that's exactly what the cooperative proposal was designed to do. So I think we will see some of the proposals.
In terms of us identifying priority areas to deal with drinking water issues, those five farms could all have domestic users on them, or none of them could have domestic users on them. That's entirely possible. And we wouldn't know in the cooperative by the requirements we've laid down for the cooperative programs. Is that correct?
The cooperative groundwater monitoring program, the requirements do provide that they have to identify which aquifers are being used for domestic drinking water. So you wouldn't know this property used domestic drinking water, but you would say this community is on domestic drinking water, this community is on drinking water, or this geographic area. So they do have to identify the resource used for domestic drinking water.
Yeah, I'm not sure what a community is, because often it's a couple or three irrigators in a house on the property. Is that a community?
Well, so you'd have to say this area, even if it's small, are on domestic drinking water wells.
All right, I have a second question. Mm-hmm. When you showed us the slide with the statistics as far as compliance, I believe that there were 2,600 growers who had selected individual monitoring, and 709 had submitted data. And you stated that some of those had not submitted data because they want to switch to the cooperative monitoring option. And then when you laid out the requirements for switching to the cooperative monitoring option, they had to have, they had to be current with essentially compliance with the order, which included already doing some sampling. And you raised the fact that you were doing that because it was a fairness question. Some other people who maybe want to switch had already done sampling, had already gone to that expense and trouble. You know, I understand the issue, and I understand the reasoning, but it seems like there might be some other sensible way to allow a farmer who is at this point not in compliance because they haven't sampled and they did not select the cooperative option, to switch to the cooperative option anyway, and maybe for your fairness issue, maybe they have to go ahead and do one sampling as the farmers who you're allowing to move from the individual option to the collective option will have done.
We can consider that option. So if I am hearing you correctly, it's basically allowing them to come into compliance after the fact. Is that what you're suggesting? So upon selecting cooperative, they would then go and sample their one, conduct that one sampling event?
Well, I share my colleague, Mr. Mm-hmm. Jordan's concern with creating I forget the term that he used.
Cumulative
non-compliance. And so even if we have people who are already non-compliant, I'm interested in giving them avenues to become compliant. That's easier than chasing down hundreds of non-compliant farmers. It's not really where we want to spend our resources.
Okay, let me take Mr. Jordan, then Dr. Wolf, then back to Dr. Hunter.
It's like the bookend approach, apparently, right? I'm so sorry.
I'm trying to get everyone involved in questions in a fair way.
I don't have a statement yet. I'll just give you a couple questions. But the phrase you used in there on part of the criteria of evaluating co-ops was some type of financial insurance. So could you talk briefly about how you're going to look at third-party groups and what would happen if I paid my money but they didn't get to my section and halfway through they flamed out, and does the ultimate responsibility and liability still lie with the operator, that type of thing?
That's an excellent question, and I believe the edits in the supplemental sheet try to attend to that. Lisa is pointing at me to let Jessica answer the question, or Ken.
Do you want me to read it?
What are you going to read, the MRP language? I don't think that'll directly answer Mr. Jordan's question, but
I think the simple answer is yes, that growers are always responsible for being in compliance with the order, even if they utilize a third party to satisfy the requirements. So if the cooperative is established and starts and for whatever reason fails and doesn't complete the work, then the work hasn't been completed according to the order, and yes, growers would be out of compliance. And I'll ask Jessica to clarify if I misrepresented that.
No, that's correct.
So you did use the word may take enforcement, though, in your narrative there. So it's not an open and shut door. You would look at individual circumstances that led to that situation?
Well, I think what we would do at that point is we would notify everybody and say, oh, by the way, the cooperative you signed up has failed, and here's what has to happen to stay in compliance, and give them an opportunity to do the sampling or whatever they needed to maintain compliance with the order.
Okay. And then the issue, you know, I'm going to bring up later because we talked about it at the briefing on the requirements of compliance in the past in order to change your selection now. Do you have any idea at all in the three geographic areas of the proposals you have right now what numbers would be excluded from that option? I mean, how much does that shut the door rather than cast the wide net that I'm looking for to bring people back into compliance?
We haven't done that analysis yet. You know, the annual compliance form and updated ENOI, for example, those are not open and shut compliance points. Growers can go in there at any time. You know, they haven't done it yet. For example, the annual compliance form, they are out of compliance, but they could simply go on the site and submit that form.
Well, my recollection at the briefing mm-hmm. was that and tell me if you've changed that, but it was that you had complied with the timeline for your EONI, or is it just that you didn't comply by that timeline, but if you do it right now, then you're in compliance even though you didn't do it with that timeline?
It was you could not participate until you had come into compliance for annual compliance form, ENY. The individual monitoring, I think that's an easy analysis, the annual compliance form and ENY, and actually I think it's also an easy thing to satisfy.
Right.
The individual monitoring
other
is not...
Other than the date that's already gone by.
Other than the date that's right. already gone by, if we could fix that. But
okay.
The individual monitoring is a more complex analysis because the data hasn't come in from everybody yet.
You don't really have a sense in those three geographical areas what numbers would be deficient there?
Well, I do know that of the data submitted so far, most are outside those three geographic areas.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Dr. Wolf?
Yeah, couple of items. One of them is on page 4, which is the list of approved laboratories for individual groundwater monitoring. So that's page 4. Under the resources for growers. And there are a total of 9 labs listed. And our Central Coast region goes from basically San Mateo County all the way to Ventura County. And unless I miss something, there is only one lab which is within the Santa Barbara County, which is a Santa Paula facility. So it seems to me a little weak in terms of having resources for individual growers. I mean, I cannot imagine that there is not another lab within Santa Barbara County and Ventura County. And I'm thinking, you know, you can get, you know, the bottle sent by mail, et cetera, and ship the samples, but... This something is missing here.
Well, this is not meant to be an exhaustive list. This is just where we've been contacted by the labs. They've worked with us to confirm that they are able to upload the data to GeoTracker. We do know that there are other labs that are able to do this. It doesn't require a water board certification. These are just the ones that we know are capable of doing all the portions necessary for compliance.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at your bold letter saying approved lab with, you know, footnote number 1, which the way I looked at this is that right now these are the labs which are approved to submit the information to GeoTrack. So my suggestion is to make it a little more user-friendly for the growers who elect to use individual groundwater monitoring. We need to do a little more outreach with those other labs who maybe haven't applied. I mean, there must be a list of the certified State Department of Public Health. I can't imagine the city of Santa Barbara, you know, sending their samples to Fresno.
I think we do have one oil. I'm going to let Hector Hernandez. He's the lead staff for groundwater monitoring requirements.
Hector Hernandez, staff engineer. There is a more comprehensive list of Department of Public Health labs, and that list is actually link to the website or to a PDF document that lists those lists in the order and is made available to all the growers. This list that we put together is a list of labs that have contacted us, that have made an effort to learn how to upload the data in the required electronic deliverable format onto the GeoTracker database. We held some trainings provided by staff from State Board, from the GeoTracker Help Desk. We advertised to all the labs listed on that public health department, that Department of Public Health list, at least the ones that are within our region. And asked them, invited them to come to our office and learn how to do this. Not very many showed up. Those that did, I believe, benefited because they are actively involved in assisting growers. And so that's basically it.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, looking at also at the economic model is that the more competition, usually the lower price pressure. So, or higher price pressure, depending if you're the buyer or the seller. So, I would suggest maybe another email to these other folks and say, okay, this is in place now. You know, about extending this list, particularly as it relates to the GeoTrack upload capability, which is one of the requirements you have.
As Angela mentioned, there are a couple other additional labs in Santa Barbara County, one in Santa Barbara County, specifically in Santa Maria. OEC, I believe, is the name. They do the GeoTracker upload, and they've been doing some of the sampling, but thus far there are only a couple of uploads that they've done onto our database.
Okay.
And there is another lab in Ventura County, set up in Ventura, that have had meetings. We've had meetings with them, and we provided them the information and guidance for being able to upload the data in the required format. But thus far, we haven't heard anything else from them.
All right. Thank you.
I hear what you're saying, though, in terms of outreaching, and we can contact that full list. It was not a difficult thing to do.
Thank you. Then my other last item that I have is regarding the individual groundwater monitoring. Now, playing back the final day of a vote on the ag order, a public comment was made regarding the individual groundwater monitoring protocol, where the original language was that it required a hydrologist or equivalent to perform the sampling. And so the public comment made was that an individual operator or farmer should be able to take samples if they use the proper chain of custody protocol, etc. And in fact, historically, this has happened before the ag order took place, where farmers would get their bottles, take the samples, send it to the lab, get the results as part of irrigation test, for example. Chair Young supported that notion, bringing back, in fact, his personal experience when he had an oyster farm, that he would take the samples in Santa Barbara to a lab and get the lab test. And he was trained on how to establish the chain of custody protocol, etc. So the agreement made was that there would be a revision to the language to allow individual sampling by the individual farmers or operators, providing that they had the proper training. Inadvertently, because of all the last-minute changes, this was not included, although it is in the records. So the agreement made with Mr. Roger Briggs, who is now retired, was, okay, let's not make another change now. Let's wait the next set of review and revisions pertaining to groundwater monitoring, et cetera, and let's look at that time to revisit this, since it was actually agreed, but inadvertently was not included in the document. So I thought to bring it up today, since we are revisiting the whole issue of individual sampling and cooperative sampling. You recall this, Mr. Chair?
Vaguely.
Yeah. It's in writing, since we had a court recorder too. So I'm not suggesting, you know, an action now.
Yeah, has it been an issue? I mean, has an issue?
Well, it is an issue because right now.
But I haven't seen an issue come before us.
Well,
that this is a problem.
Well, because right now, individual farmers cannot take the sample themselves. They have to use a third party, and in fact, third party labs do charge, and I can tell you exactly how much, it's $50 a sample to take the sample, in addition to the fee for the sampling, mm-hmm. and in addition, in some case, because it's a la carte, for the GeoTrack downloading. So there is an added cost.
Right, okay.
But, you know, I'm just floating the idea here and would like to, you know, make sure that what was inadvertently omitted may be reconsidered.
That language is in the MRP, so it is something that we could consider.
But I want to bring up a point, though, is we're talking about individual growers who, in the life of this order, have to take how many samples?
Two different times. Well, the sampling is depending on their farm, but two different times in the order. So September, December, which is passed, and now March through June.
So I'm thinking about the time and effort to for growers to get trained to take two samples in a five-year period, and, you know, is that really... I guess I would question whether or not that would be a worthwhile effort. I don't know.
Well, that usually laboratories have a written set of procedure, which is really a two-page document on the proper sampling technique and also the chain of custody. In the language right now, a third party can take the sample, and it just has a... And it's in our document here, there is a generic descriptive saying that that party needs to be properly trained to perform the sampling. So it doesn't really tell us, you know, a four-hour CU.
So what we can do for May, because we still are in the sampling period, and we'll be, we can look at that issue and discuss it among ourselves. We can discuss it with the grower reps and see if they think that's a value to them. And if it is, I guess we can come back with some proposed language in May for your consideration in terms of modifying the MRP.
So to be clear, I have not evaluated it closely yet, but that benefits the growers who are at the very tail end of their groundwater monitoring, individual groundwater monitoring requirement, or those growers who selected cooperative and then will now be doing individual as a follow-up. So that's where the benefit is for those growers who are later in the process of doing the individual groundwater monitoring.
Yep.
Yep. Anything else? Thanks. Okay. Dr. Hunter, last question, and then we're going to break for lunch.
Thank you. I have two. One I forgot, I remembered. Back to individual monitoring. I asked you if the GAMMA program data may come into play in terms of providing some assistance. We also have the GAP program, and I haven't heard how that might be rolling out. And if I know the resources there are limited, but is there a potential there to assist where some of these challenges exist for this sampling requirement?
It seems like a parallel opportunity. So I can't think of a reason why they could not be used to support the cooperative monitoring programs. If that data fills the required data gaps, we can align the coordination for those two efforts.
Okay. So how would a farmer avail themselves of that program? Do they have to specifically request it, or is that part of the dialogue?
Let me make sure I understand your question correctly. Are you thinking an individual farmer sort of jumps into this program? I hadn't thought of it that way.
To come into mm-hmm. compliance, they have to have done at least one sampling. Mm-hmm. So for the smaller operators, mm-hmm. which I think there's been some discussion here about being concerned, with the smaller operators, if GAP funds are available for that.
So I'm the way I'm hearing you describe it, it sounds more like utilizing those existing efforts to comply with the individual groundwater monitoring requirements.
Right. In order to
right, and that and
to
right,
cooperate.
And that is absolutely a possibility. And in fact, some growers who have that data as part of the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, they're included in that program, have uploaded that as their existing data. I'm not sure yet what the GAP program would be able to provide, but I think it's similar to, you know, we allocated about $10,000 to the limited resource farmers, and the analyte lists and everything like that is similar to what's being considered for GAP.
Okay, so. Well, that's good mm-hmm. to hear. I like to see the nexus between these different efforts and coordinating.
I think the challenge might be timing. That's
exactly. But if we're aware mm-hmm. and looking at to see how we can best coordinate those resources, then the second and last question it builds on the question of Mr. Johnson, and that is, if in the cooperative program, if the groundwater sample that's provided indicates that that upper aquifer is contaminated to the degree that any drinking water source would likely be an issue, what steps are taken, or how do you respond to that information, since they aren't obligated to provide drinking water well data? What is the next step?
So I would say it is what is similar to what is described in the supplemental sheet in terms of what will the water board do with the data, and there's various bullets there of types of follow-up. You know, it could be as simple as following up with growers just to say, you know, right at the drinking water level, we need to really reduce loading, and we're looking at management practices, or it could go as far as notifying the well users in that area to alert them of the potential exposure to that water, and maybe even the provision of safe drinking water supplies.
Okay. So, in other words, it's not like we're just taking the data. We say, look, here's the hot spot. There is going to be some follow-up where we suspect there's some potential exposure.
Right. And I would actually go further to say that there is, from our perspective, there is urgency with which to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We will take our lunch break for 1 hour. We'll reconvene at 1:30, and we'll start with Abby Taylor Silva's presentation, and then Claire Weinman's presentation, and then with the rest of the speaker cards thereafter. Thank you.